Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. Choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
The next total eclipse that's going to come anywhere near St. Louis will be in 2045. That one's going to last more than 6 minutes.
Whoa.
And that's a really, really long eclipse, and I'm planning on sticking around for that one.
In 2017, folks around the St. Louis region retreated to a rare celestial delight, a total solar eclipse. That's when the moon passes between the sun and Earth and casts a shadow here. Those total solar eclipses have wowed millions of people over so many generations, and in 2017, that was the case for our producer, Maya Norfleet.
Look up! Oh my God! Oh! Wow! Wow!
Next April, the shadow of the moon will grace the region yet again, and it will draw even more solar eclipse chasers, known as umbrophiles. Plus, next year's eclipse will be twice as long as the one that happened here 6 years ago. Maya, our producer, caught up with author David Barron, who has chased numerous total solar eclipses across the world, and he wrote a book about historic eclipse called American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. Here's Maya with that story.
We'll start off by just letting you know I am super jealous of you, David. I want to be an umbrophile one day, but for now I'm just a rookie. I did see the eclipse here in St. Louis in 2017.
Great.
But I wanted to know, what piqued your interest in total solar eclipses?
I was just inspired to go see it by an astronomer who told me how spectacular a total solar eclipse was and that I really should see one at least once in my life. And that inspired me to go down to Aruba back in the winter of 1998, really not sure what I was going to see. And it just was the most awe-inspiring and I would say spiritual experience I had ever had. And it got me hooked.
So what was it that the astronomer said that made you go, okay, fine, I'll go check it out?
Yes, well, I should tell you, the astronomer, his name was Jay Pasikoff. And he just died last fall. He was a real mentor of mine. It was a real loss for me personally and also for the eclipse-chasing community. He really inspired many, many people to go see total eclipses. And Jay Pasikoff, I was working as a science reporter for WBUR in Boston and for NPR back in 1994. And I was doing a story about a partial solar eclipse that was going to cross the U.S. And I interviewed Jay Pasikoff, and he told me that as interesting as the partial eclipse was going to be, that it was nothing compared with the true awe-inspiring beauty of a total solar eclipse. And he said to me, you know, before you die, you owe it to yourself to experience a total solar eclipse. Mm. And he said it with such sincerity and passion that I took him seriously. And that's what inspired me then 4 years later to see my first total eclipse.
And now, how many have you seen now to date?
To date, I've seen 8 total eclipses. I just saw my 8th last month in Australia. I went all the way to far northwestern Australia, a 14-hour drive north of Perth in the middle of nowhere, the only place in mainland Australia where you could actually see this total eclipse. It lasted all of 56 seconds.
Oh.
And it was worth it. It just was amazing.
You traveled far for less than a minute of total solar.
For less than a minute, yeah. Well, and so that's, I should say, the total eclipse next year that's going to cross the U.S. is going to last, in some places, more than 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time for a total eclipse. I've never seen a total eclipse that long. And so this really is one not to miss.
Yeah. So with your very first one, you said it was in Aruba. What was it like? Like, what were the people around you doing? What did it look like or feel like? Because you were in a whole nother country than the U.S., so I would imagine it would be a different feel than maybe the one I had when I in St. Louis.
Right. Well, of course, I mean, Aruba, since it's a tourist destination, I was at a Hyatt Hotel, and there were lots of Americans and Europeans and folks from all over the world who were there. And there was a real sense of excitement as the partial eclipse started. The moon started to move in front of the sun, and the sun became a thinner and thinner crescent.
Yeah.
And then at the moment of totality, that's the moment when the moon completely covered the face of the sun, the beach went dark, not dark like night, but dark sort of like twilight. And at that moment, the beach erupted with cheers, and we took off our eclipse glasses. And this is important because, you know, you hear you should never look at the sun with the naked eye. And right. That is true, except for one exception. And that is if you're in the path of a total eclipse during the total part of the eclipse, which again only can last a few minutes, then it is safe to look with the naked eye. And so we took off our eclipse glasses. And when I looked at the sky, I was overcome with emotion because this was a sky I had never seen in my entire life. It was a whole new view of the universe and the solar system. It was a chance to look at the sun with the naked eye in the sky with the planets at the same time. So I was able to see the sun in the center with Jupiter and Venus and Mercury along it. So I really had a sense I was looking at the center of the solar system.
Wow.
And seeing the planets as they revolve around the sun. But the sun, of course, doesn't look like the normal sun. The bright surface has been blocked, and all you can see then around the dark moon is the sun's atmosphere, which is called the solar corona.
Yeah.
And that is a spectacularly glorious sight. It glows with this unearthly light. And if you've ever seen a picture of the solar corona of a total eclipse, pictures usually don't do it justice because it's not just some simple ring around the dark moon, but it's this textured kind of feathery, silky.
It kind of looks like smoke.
Yeah, well, it looks different each time. Again, having seen eight of them now, the solar corona never looks the same. Sometimes it looks like a flower with petals coming off.
Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes it looks like it has just these big pennants coming off. Or sometimes it's oblong. Sometimes it's more round. But I am not a religious person, but it was a religious experience. It just made me feel like I understood how vast the universe is and how tiny I am.
Oh, my God.
Which was both scary and really, really kind of reassuring that even though I am so tiny and so meaningless in the scheme of things, I'm part of something so much larger than myself. And it was a wonderful feeling.
I remember, so when I was looking up, I'm a darker complected person, right? So I rarely get sunburned, but I definitely got sunburned this day. My face was hot and I was just staring. And as soon as I could take my glasses off, the first word out of my mouth, I'm pretty sure, was a cuss word that I can't air. But I started losing it because how quiet everything got. Like, I was at Jefferson Barracks here in the region, and it was a field full of people, and everyone's just like, whoa, this is really cool.
Well, one of the wonderful things about total eclipses is that they bring people together. It's this experience of awe that kind of dissolves the individual ego and makes us all feel like we're part of something bigger than ourselves. And it extends beyond just the people you're with at the time, but it makes you understand people of past generations, of whole other eras. And back in 1878, scientists knew how to predict when total eclipses would occur. There were tourists and great scientists, Thomas Edison, who went out to Wyoming for the total eclipse. It was the same kind of exciting human experience back in the 19th century that it is today. And if you read the descriptions from that time of what people felt when they saw total eclipses, it's exactly what both you and I are describing.
Yes. And it is only something that you can really, I don't know any other experience in life that you can get that same feeling. At least I haven't had that same feeling yet. So when I talk to people, like, you have to go into totality, because I don't really know how to, even if I show them the video of me losing it, it's still not the same.
And it's important to point out that you have to be in the totality to see it. So for instance, the total eclipse on April 8th of next year, the path of totality will go southeast of St. Louis.
Yep.
If you're in St. Louis itself, you will experience a 99% partial eclipse. And that sounds really impressive. And a lot of people will probably say, well, that's good enough. Why do I need to travel a number of miles south to Cape Girardeau or southeast to Carbondale, Illinois, to be in the path of totality? But let me tell you, you have to go into the path of totality to have the experience we're talking about. Don't tell yourself that a 99% partial eclipse is good enough. It really isn't.
I'm speaking with David Barron, author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. You are going across the world to see these things, and there are some people that are like, I don't know, 99% might be enough. How rare is it to be able to say, you know, the St. Louis area has had or is about to have two in less than 10 years, in less than a decade, within driving distance? How rare is that?
That's pretty darn rare. So any given point on Earth will see a total eclipse about once every 400 years.
Okay. 400.
So if you look at Carbondale, Illinois, which is actually in the path of the 2024 eclipse and was in the path of the 2017, to have two total eclipses within 7 years is really unusual. But the next total eclipse that's going to come anywhere near St. Louis will be in 2045. And that's that. But that's still going to pass south of Memphis. So this one coming up next year is still remarkably close to St. Louis.
Okay, I've been making a list of where I should probably be. I've already told my supervisor, like, if we're not there for the show, you're going to realize, like, oh no, everyone's sick that day because I'm going I'm going to see this eclipse. How do you keep track of your experiences? Because you already have said that solar eclipses can look different. How do you keep track of that?
You know, if it's funny, it's not hard at all because every eclipse I've seen is seared into my brain. I mean, I can close my eyes and I can picture what the solar corona, the sun's outer atmosphere, what it looked like at any particular eclipse. I vividly remember the one in Aruba in 1998. I remember seeing one in Munich in 1999. I remember the one in Queensland, Australia in 2012.
Wow.
You know how emotional experiences, even if they last a moment, when you learn terrible news or you learn really exciting news, or you know you have a near-death experience. I mean, I don't want to say that obviously a total eclipse is very different, but I think it works in the brain in the same way because it is so unusual that your brain is working overtime to capture all that information. And so even though a total eclipse, if you're lucky, lasts 4 minutes, it's something you'll remember for the rest of your life.
But I've been trying to convince my mother to go see it because she didn't go with me last time. And I'm like, when?
Where does she live?
She lives in St. Louis. It's literally...
Yeah, you need to just kidnap her.
Where do you plan to be on April 8th, 2024, when the next total solar eclipse is in North America?
Well, I already have plans to be in Waco, Texas. And Texas, first of all, because the path of the total eclipse goes from, in the U.S., goes from Texas to Maine. And Texas, it will last longer than when it gets to Maine. So in Texas, it'll last as long as about 4.5 minutes. By the time the moon's shadow gets to Maine, it'll last only 3.5 minutes. The odds of clear skies are better in Texas than in New England. And Waco sits right in the middle of the path of totality. So if you were to look at a map of where the total eclipse is going to be visible on April 8th of 2024, you ideally want to be toward the middle of that path because the closer you are to the middle, the longer the eclipse will last. If you're toward the edge, it may only last 20 seconds. It may last 5 seconds. But if you're toward the middle, in Texas, it'll last as long as 4.5 minutes. By the time it gets up to Missouri, it may be 4 minutes. By the time it gets to New England, 3.5 minutes.
Do you have any tips for people who might be like finally realizing, oh my gosh, this is something I really need to figure out? And I got, at this point, less than a year to make plans. Do you have any tips for them?
Absolutely. First of all, plan early because I know it probably sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I'm not. But many communities in the Path of Totality, hotel rooms are already sold out for April of next year. It's not too late. I mean, I would get on it right now and look for a place to stay. But even if you can't stay within the Path of the Total Eclipse, or you can't stay in a hotel in the Path of the Total Eclipse, there are other options. You might be able to pitch a tent. Believe me, whenever the total eclipse comes around, farmers will often open up their fields for people to pitch tents for a fee, but it's cheaper than going into a hotel. You could get up in the middle of the night and drive in. Although this total eclipse will occur in the early to mid-afternoon, so if you're a few hours outside the path, that would be a reasonable thing to do, except expect that there will be crazy, crazy traffic.
Oh, yeah.
So staying within the Path of Totality is the better way to go. But you also want to make sure that you're nimble. If you happen to be staying someplace where it turns out that 2 days beforehand it's just going to be socked in with clouds, you might want to change plans and go someplace else where the skies are going to be clear, because you're going to miss the show if it's cloudy on the day of the eclipse.
The length of totality can vary. You just saw less than a minute of totality in Australia. Why is there a difference each time?
Good question. Because the moon's orbit around the Earth is not a circle. It's an ellipse. So sometimes the moon is closer to the Earth and sometimes the moon is farther away. And when the moon is closer to the Earth, because it's closer, it looks bigger in the sky. And if it should pass in front of the sun at that time, it will take a longer time for the moon to cross in front of the sun. So when the moon is closer to the Earth, if there's a total eclipse, the eclipse will last longer. If the moon is farther from the Earth, sometimes, even if the moon goes right in front of the sun, it's not quite large enough to completely block the sun. And in that case, you end up with something called an annular eclipse, where it's really a kind of a partial eclipse. But at its peak, what's left of the sun is a very thin rim of the sun's surface. Sometimes it's called a ring of fire eclipse. And there's going to be one of those crossing the western and southwestern part of the United States this coming October. And an annular eclipse is interesting, but again, I would not cross the planet to see an annular eclipse. I would do it for a total eclipse.
It's just not the same.
Right. So for the eclipse coming up in April of next year, that total eclipse, that's going to be on the long side. That one will be more than 4 minutes. And then, for those keeping track, in 2045, the total eclipse that will cross the United States that year, that one's going to last more than 6 minutes.
Whoa.
And that's a really, really long eclipse, and I'm planning on sticking around for that one.
Other than, obviously, it's really cool, life-changing moment to be witness to a total solar eclipse. What other opportunities are there? Are there different things we learn about the sun or about space when they happen?
Well, there are astronomers who go to total eclipses and use them to study, particularly to study the solar corona, because that's, if you want to see the sun's outer atmosphere, the solar corona, that beautiful feathery thing that appears around the dark moon during a total eclipse, the only time to see that from the Earth's surface directly is during a total eclipse. Mm. Now, we do have spacecraft that are able to watch it 24 hours a day these days, but still astronomers find it a useful thing to do. However, back in the 19th century, total eclipses were very important to science, and that's why the eclipse of 1878, which I write about in my book, there were dozens of astronomers who spent months planning these expeditions out to the Western United States for something that was going to last all of 3 minutes, because it was such a valuable experience. And there also are citizen science experiments, including there were some in 2017, and I expect there will be some again in 2024, with people studying the behavior of animals during a total eclipse. Some zoos that were in the path of the 2017 eclipse had volunteers watch the animals to see which ones actually started behaving strangely when the sun suddenly went away.
Why do you go to so many? Like, what is it that drives you each time that you look at a calendar, or you have them probably all listed out for the foreseeable future? Why do you make such an effort to go to these total solar eclipses?
It's going to sound really corny, but it's true. It's just a reminder of how fortunate I am, and we all are, to live on this planet. Just how fortunate I am to be alive. It's such a beautiful thing to see. It's completely meaningless. I mean, I'm not making any money off going to seeing a total eclipse. I'm not, it's taking time away from other things I should be doing, but it's just so beautiful and so rare that it gives me joy. That's it. It's pure joy. But when I look at a total eclipse and I see the vastness of the universe and the power of things so much bigger than me, I mean, it can be a life-changing experience. I've met so many people who have seen total eclipses, and they go into it thinking, what's the big deal? And they come out of it saying, I'm going to start chasing these because they mean so much to me. So I know it sounds like I'm crazy, and I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but believe me, most people who see a total eclipse come out the other side and say, now I get it.
That's author David Barron talking with St. Louis On the Air producer Maya Norfleet. Barron is the author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. The next total solar eclipse to grace the St. Louis area will be April 8th, 2024.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Our podcast proudly supports St. Louis artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis On the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.